so my name is Tim Jones and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and the One Another Project on Trafalgar Square, London. It's the 7th of October, 2009, and the time's approximately 4:15 in the morning. Can you please tell me your name, your age, and where you come from?
I'm Steve Marshall. I'm 57, and I come from Kent in the UK.
Okay, thank you. When was it you first found out about the One Another Project?
I got an email from Artichoke, because I'd tried to follow the elephant, and so I was on a mailing list.
And then what was the story with the elephant? Can you tell us a little bit about how you
I was interested in it. I've been involved in amateur theatre in one form or another for over 40 years, an actor and director, and enjoyed myself enormously. The Bearing One's Backside to audiences of 850 in Minnack in Cornwall was amazing. And they laughed. So it's been good. And the idea of a street theatre around London was very interesting. I was never able to get to any of it, but I sort of signed up to the website, so I occasionally got emails. I got emails about the Spider in Liverpool, which was interesting. And then I got this email, and click. Just went, there was no question, it was just on the assumption I wouldn't get in. And the fact, I think I clicked it about 20 minutes after it had gone out, and I think it was the first of the pieces of publicity that I'd ever been aware of. And I came, it comes up with this, you're number 3,000 and something. And I thought, oh well, I'll never get in there. And now I'm here.
So how did you feel when you received the notification that you'd been allocated a slot?
I was actually getting off a plane and sort of switched the BlackBerry on to sort of collect the email, and it was there, and I thought, oh, this is just another one of those sorry, not this time. And I was rather shocked, and thought, oh my god, now I'm actually going to have to do something. And I'd been extremely careful to try and avoid planning what I might do until then, and then I actually had to. And I went through various political things that I would like to talk about and have talked about too long and too often, and decided that actually they're not worth doing. They're not unknown. And what matters? What matters to us as people? And I thought, there's some pieces of poetry and short stories I've written which I wouldn't mind a wider audience hearing, and that's evolved into what is a collection of poetry based around our relationships. Our relationships with each other, with the planet, and at a global level. The oppressed, the oppressors, and such like. And I decided then to put this out to family, friends, and say, okay, make suggestions, particularly if you've got stuff that's your own. And if you haven't and have got favourites that fit the themes, then feed those. So I've had a fairly good response. I've had to not use quite a lot. There's some that I've got in the collection now, which won't go in probably, because I think I've got just a little too much, but that was the plan. I think I'm very proud of some of the ones. There's a few by a niece and a nephew of mine. There's others that people have sent which are personal stuff, and they feel really important. I mean, I've put on the website the sort of one of the things that we men are reputedly not very good at, this relationships thing. But we can do something about it, is my belief. And this is a bit of my something to say, actually, these, finding out how we have relationships with the rest of the universe is probably why we're here. It's certainly been a big learning curve for me. So.
Okay, great. So who would you say you're doing this for?
Probably me, my family. My wife and stepchildren are hugely important to me, and they will get some degree of mention up there. I'm also supporting a charity my wife's been involved with for a number of years, and so have I as a trustee, which is an organisation called Revision, which trains counsellors and psychotherapists. And of all the organisations I've come across, it's rather better at understanding relationships than a lot of others. And so I have asked people that if they wish, when sending me poetry, that they wish to make a donation to this, they are invited to do so, and a number have. So and that money will go to their bursary fund for supporting students and who wouldn't otherwise be able to do the training, particularly those who are likely to be excluded, because therapy and counselling is very much a middle-class white arena. So spreading that to wider ethnic groups, wider social groups, seems important. It was good for me.
Great, thank you. Can you tell us a bit about your association with for the theatre and how far that goes back?
I was first. I think the first thing I ever did was a church panto that my father was involved in. And I got hooked. The roar of the grease paint and the smell of the crowd is... There's people standing there applauding you because you've done something. It's very powerful. And I found something that I could do. And I toyed with going into professional theatre and getting a drama training, and that didn't work, so I ended up staying in the amateur field. It's given me the opportunity to do an inordinate range of parts, from Stanley Kowalski to Big Daddy, both Tennessee Williams characters, and most professional actors may do one, but they'll very rarely do both, and I have, so that. I've directed a variety of plays in different places, The Fringe in Edinburgh, around London, and some of them have been very, very good. Some of them have been pretty poor, but that's the nature of doing live stuff. You can't guarantee what's going to happen. It's about the moment. I think that's one of the appeals of this. It's about the moment. I know it's being recorded, but it's about the moment is actually where the essence lies. It's not just about, we've got this nice record of so-and-so. It's like you go to the, you see recordings of concerts or theatre or whatever. They're flat. It's only when you're physically there that you get this third, fourth, fifth, 12th dimension happens. Something goes on. The interaction between us now, it's real. Someone hearing this, it won't be there. And I think that's one of the real appeals. Live theatre has always struck me as being incredibly powerful in that respect. It's a way into the psyche, it's a way to understand humanity, and it can also be very entertaining and very simplistic and so on, but it's whereas film and television are different mediums and they have their own appeal and they work in their own way, but they're not comparable. Live theatre is something that works for me.
What impact would you like your hour on the plinth to have?
I'd like it to make some people think, because I think that's what poetry is about, is catching an essence in a few words, rather than a great long speech or a complex argument. I hope people will like it, they will appreciate it. I've attempted at least to have to select poetry which works at a single reading, which is tough because most poems need a second reading. It's normally only the second time through that you catch quite a lot of it, but they can, people, if something does appeal to them, they get the opportunity to hear it again. So I'm not going to repeat stuff, yeah, I think if that's all that I achieve, is that some people think and feel. It's the other thing we don't do enough of. I think men in particular and British society is very, very good at stopping us feeling. We're told as children, don't be a big boy, don't cry. Bury your feelings, hide them, don't have them. And I think we should have our feelings. So, yeah. If I can make one person feel, that's worth it.
And what is it you do for a living?
I'm an IT consultant.
And how did you get into that?
I fell into it. Having decided that a drama school wasn't going to work for me, I ended up going to Teach Training College to do English and drama, and I taught for a short period. Decided that that wasn't for me, and ended up applying to the civil service, and because I could do the exams and see whether they would, and they were paying a reasonable rate of salary at the time, and they suggested, would you like to come and join the Metropolitan Police Civil Service, civil staff, on the computer side? And I thought, I don't see quite how they get from where I am to where they are, but okay, there's no staff room involved, so I'll go. And I've got into that, and I found something that I enjoyed, and I've had a good time at for quite a long time.
And what other stuff do you get up to in your spare time?
Most of my spare time evaporates. I don't know if spare time's the right phrase. We have a house in France where we are proportionally spending more and more time, where we keep vegetables and animals and so on. So I'm a smallholder as well. And that's the future. I don't know that we're heading for self-sufficiency, but we're not far off it. And there is no better piece of food than the vegetable you've just picked or the sausage that you stroked every day while it was growing. I know what they ate. I know what went on the vegetables. It's great. Flavour is fabulous compared to anything else. So that's where I'm in the process of heading.
What was that been like, kind of setting up and establishing yourselves across in France?
It's been quite complex. We had vaguely planned this as sort of a retirement process, and for a variety of reasons then hit the point of saying, well, actually, if this is what we want to do, surely the sensible thing to do is to do it now. So I come back and forth to the UK, my wife comes back and forth to the UK for work and so on. So it's quite complicated and quite logistically difficult. It's why my wife's not here today, otherwise she would be, to support me. There's the difficulties of language. My French is fairly limited, but I am struggling to learn and doing what I can. And they're a great people. All the statements about, oh, the French are horrible and they're rude and so on, I think is restricted to Parisians, a very few of whom I've met, so I don't even know if it's true of them. But it's certainly not true of the people who live in the country. That I have very, very rarely met anyone who is rude and unpleasant. It's so quiet as well. We are a long way back from anything that could bounce to a main road. You can barely hear anything. Driving in this morning, and getting here an hour or two ago, I still find it difficult to get through my head quite how light it is and quite how noisy. The fact that there is a constant hum all the time, and that the whole way up the sky is lit, and I get up, the only time the sky's lit in France is when the moon's up overnight, so it feels very different. And, but no, it's good.
So what hopes, plans, fears do you have for the future?
The hopes are that we can make sure that the France project works and sustains us both physically and emotionally, and we can enjoy our lives there. And that's the plan. That's what we're intent on doing. The fears are that it won't work. Things like the drop in the pound last year was painful. The economic situation here is not as good, which means how long we have to keep working, particularly with the latest Tory government announcement that my pension age will be rising. It suddenly politics gets personal when they do things like that. Also where the world is going, I am still utterly appalled at Blair and Bush and the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, for which they have no legal justification, but they want control of the world's oil, and that's why they're there. And I'm getting sadder by the day that Obama is not talking about the exit, so on. Our global politics stinks. There are a small number of countries which control and manage the world's economy for their benefit, and they're the rich countries. And okay, I'm part of the rich countries, so I don't entirely say this is nothing to do with me. And it's not just the UK and the US, France is part of that as well, so I'm not just moving away and so on. It's very sad, and I think we ought to be doing something about it rather than what we appear to be doing, which is maintaining it. And the political parties in this country have given up policy. They're both the same. I couldn't tell the difference between one or the other, except one's going to cut this and the other one's going to impose that. Which again, I think when I was your age, when I was young, there was a difference. There was something to vote for. I don't know enough about their policies. I try to find out, but actually what I get is personalities. And yes, I'm a nicer personality than him, therefore vote for me, as opposed to this is what I'm going to do. And I think that's very sad as well. There are more than 6 billion people on this planet, and like it or not, we are affecting it. There are those who say global warming is not happening and it's not the fault of human beings, but we are eating up the energy resources, we are eating up the water resources. The next big wars and the really nasty ones are going to be over water. Because there isn't enough fresh water for everyone to have the amounts that we happily use. So that's going to get more difficult. And I worry about my stepchildren's generation and the generation beyond. You can't turn around and say, right, well, the planet can only sustain 3 billion people, therefore we're going to get rid of 3 billion. It doesn't quite work like that. So I just don't know what to do about it. But there are too many people for this planet, the way we're operating. And either we change the way we operate, or there's going to be sufficient level of disaster that it will be forced upon us. And I don't know. And I think that's going to be very painful.
Finally, to talk about the project a little bit, how does it feel to be one of 2,400 people that get to experience the One Another piece?
Great. I think it's a fabulous idea. I think it's a lovely thought to allow it to happen. Yes, I've seen some people up there not doing anything at all and feeling, why? But that's because I want to do something. And so that's down to them as individuals, I suppose. And that's part of the process, is that some people will not do anything, and that's part of the total. It's different. It's a one-off. They'll never let them repeat this. They're going to stick a lump of granite up on there before long. But I think that's, to some extent, that's what art is about. It's, there isn't a nice specific, oh yes, there is a nice picture. Why don't we do art like Constable did, the Hay Wain? It's a nice rural picture. Well, it wasn't when he painted it. It was something different. And modern art is always going to be controversial. Van Gogh never made any money. Neither did most of the old masters. Picasso and Dali were described as rubbish when they were painting. Now they're worth millions. Is half a cow in formaldehyde art? I don't know, but people are talking about it still, so it's doing something. Art does something. It stirs something. Some people will be angry about this, total waste of time, public money, whatever. Some people will be fascinated by it. And it captures something from 2,400 people. I mean, I hadn't really been aware of this interview as part of this process. So it feel in that respect, it's okay, that's an oral history that's been snapshot in time. The generations that have passed that aren't with us anymore, we are losing that real history. We've got the history from the history books and the historians, but that's normally written by whoever won the war, as opposed to, if you like, the ordinary people, those of us who are not running countries. We're just trying to run our lives. And so that feels really good to be part of this.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.